जय राधा माधवा कुंजा बिहारी
जय राधा माधवा
गोपी जन बाधवा गिरिवारी धारी
जय गोपी जन
जन बल्लभा दिवारी
हारी
नान जन राजा
Yeah.
Kataba. As other Sisi Mar, Divine Grace, is time from the child, Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Bhakti, Jaya Vishnu, Dhamaham Bhagavata Kataba. As other Sisi Mar, Divine Grace, Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Kumaraj ki, Sri Ramachandra Hridas Koki, Prem Sekhar Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Jadaita Gidhai Sivas Sri Goya Bhakta Vind ki, Sri Sri Yadha Krishna Sama Sundar Kunjiri Yavadhan ki, Sundaran Dham ki, Matoya Dham ki, Navarib Dham ki, Jimunamai ki, Gangamai ki, Tulasi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Samadera Bhakta Vind ki, all glories in Samir Votis. All glories are glories in Samir Votis. All glories are glories in Sikhu and Sikhu Ranga. Oh, Maganat Miranyasya Vienna Jana Shilakshaya Shakshu Nalitam Yena Tadmai Sri Guru Namaha Sri Chaitanya Namo Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Vipakada Mayam Janati Svaparantikam Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Niti Namine Namaste Sarasati Deva Gauravani Pracharame Deva Sasya Sunjavari Pastachade Satarame Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Vedaita Garbha Sivasadi Go Bhakta Vindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare His God from the child His Divine Grace Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai Shri Sri Radha Damodara Ji Ki So, I'd like to continue what I've been doing each opportunity I get to share something. I'm trying to complete the sharing of the meditations from our Beggar 4 on Die Before Dying. We just recently had a part of our last weekend, the devotees making so many vows, so many promises. Rots. And we see that people are making vows all over the world for different reasons. They're promising, they're making contracts, they are making resolutions. They're marrying. But too often we see that what was intended is not carried through. We talked about the importance of being proper shikshas, proper sadhikas. For we have this goal, at sadhya, the final goal, final decisions, our siddhanta is to ultimately help us to engage in saranagati, full commitment, full surrender. And to fully do anything is not easy, especially in Kali Yuga, where things are so quick, so temporary, and people jump in and jump out of whatever it is, because opportunities are just so heterogeneous, they're so variegated, they're so available. So if one thing doesn't work, then throw it away and try something else, or give it up. So it makes it hard for new sadhakas or as well as senior sadhakas sometimes to remain very focused when our contemporary culture, so much of modernity says just experience and just do or accept what fits into our comfort zone or what seems to be accepted by the fads or by the moment. And so our sadhana should be very firm. The sadhya, the goal, we are sadhakas to engage in strong sadhana. So our sadhana has so much to do with, we say, the ninefold process. What is that? We hear it so much. What is this ninefold process? What are these things? Yes. Yes, it's these wonderful things. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. We mentioned how Bhaktivinoda says only three things one needs is Shravan, Mahan, and Smaran. That is, hearing and reflecting. And then intense absorption and remembrance. When one begins to fully become overwhelmed, possessed with a goal, and could totally determine that at any cost to achieve and to attain that goal. Now we see in so many of our activities that was something that's really important, that we find ways to become very fixed on that particular goal. Until finally we have it. Until finally we've accomplished it. And there are times when something is so important to us, we literally dream about it. In our dreams and even in our daydreams, we're so much reflecting on that. And sometimes we go to a vision quest where we visualize it. Some people, they visualize something they want with the idea that if they keep thinking about it and they focus on it with intense mental energy, that they will, you know, they will be able to possess it. So this is a perverted form of mana or manasa seva. It's a perverted form of really focusing the mind and becoming absorbed until one becomes that. It's a certain aspect of divya mata or divine madness where one just becomes intoxicated with the spiritual absorptions, and nothing becomes anywhere of a priority over serving the divine couple. We know, we hear this wonderful story of in Mahabharata, where Arjuna was, and the Pandavas were asked to shoot the eye of the bird. And where Dronacharya called them one after another, but just really, you know, really to dismiss them until Arjuna came forth. And so one after the other he would ask, "Do you see the tree? Do you see the leaves? Do you see the branch?" And as they would say yes, he would say, "Okay, you can go sit on. You can retire." But when it came to Arjuna, and the same questions, and one after another, he said no. So the tree was there, the limbs were there, the branches were there, the leaves, they were also there. But Arjuna said no. Now was Arjuna in denial? Was he insensitive? Was he blind? No, it was the opposite. He had such vision, such directed focus, vision. He says a devotee is to be a dosha darsi, doubtful, and he is to be free of doubt and free of fear. And the tendency is we get too distracted by fear, by doubts, or we get distracted by other things that are there. The mukhyas are there and the gunas, the primary and the secondary. We get too distracted sometimes by things that are genuinely necessary, but they're gona, they're secondary. So we're warned by the acharyas to be particularly careful not to get caught up by things that are obvious, deviations, But also even more so to be careful with those things that are necessary, but are still part of the secondary. So this story reminds us about, yes, things may be there and are there, but we still have to look through them or beyond them. We have to rise above them. This is Nishchay Gunya, Bhava, Arjuna. We have to, yes, go above all of this. So it's not easy when so many things are there, bouncing, imposing on one. But this is necessary. Whether it's lack of money, lack of health, lack of fame, or lack of this security, that security, that none of these things are. None of these things justify abandoning devotion or being weak in one's devotional service. But actually the opposite. They're all really catalysts. Because the fact that Krishna is supreme, Parameshwara, he is the supreme controller. The fact that he is most merciful, then it means he's going to mercifully arrange situations that appear to be obstacles, but are really steps to help us to come to him. And this is what the Vaishnavas do. That we want to get the mercy of the Vaishnavas. We want to take shelter of the glorious Satyas. Sri Vaishnava Kripa Pratyena Atene, is that one must be hungry to get this mercy from the glorious Vaishnavas. And we have that kind of hunger, and they will be eager to feed us to respond. So today I want to share something on in relationship to the ninefold processes and in relationship to death. Let me just give one short story first, and then we'll read a short meditation. Again, showing the significance of focus and intense focus even while we engage in our bhajan. This story of a sadhu who was meditating in the bush. So he was a rather austere and, you know, and powerful yogi. And he would engage in this deep practice on a daily basis, secluding himself away from so many other bombardments of the secular society, the secular world. But one day as he was meditating, he heard this activity ruffling in the bush. Because he was literally in the bush meditating in the forest. And he became alarmed, wondering, is it a snake? Is it a tiger? Is it a thief? You know, a dacoit coming to disturb. So, as he was looking and looking to see what it was, the ruffling was getting louder, and all of a sudden, this lady just came out of the bush, dressed in a very sensual way. Since he was a yogi, he had insight. You know, yogis can sometimes read minds. Or physiognomy, they can also understand something about one's thoughts. So he could understand that she was literally going to meet her paramour. And just as she came out, she ran over him. Literally just walked right over him. Or stepped over him. He was thinking how sinful that she is, of course. And went back into meditation. And what happened, some hours later, he if she comes back again, not rushing, but coming back through the same path. This time she saw him, she offered her humble respects. He was angry. He says, "You're the same one who just hours ago came and practically knocked me over, disturbed my bhajan. And now you are coming in a mood of simplicity and humility." And she apologized. And she explained, he could understand, with closer reflection and sensitivity to her and her utterances, is that she was just so overwhelmed and eager and excited about meeting her beloved, her lover, her paramour for sexual activity, that nothing was so obvious to her, that other things somehow didn't even seem to exist, did not distract her, she didn't even notice him, because she was fixed in making that connection with this person secretively at a particular time. So he quickly got a realization. Is here this lady, like a harlot, was so fixed in her sense gratification that she wasn't distracted. That nothing was of significance, importance, of a meditation to her other than having this sex life. And here he had gone through years and years of this intense meditation and different kinds of tapasya, different types of austerities. And so, but when he heard the noise, he became distracted, which literally broke his meditation. So it made him realize how weak his bhajan really was. Although he was engaged in the process, that it really wasn't that intense. And see, in practicality, we can understand something when it's put to a test. We know how strong something is when we have to give it an endurance test. We know how strong the rope is. We know how strong the building is. We know earthquake, hurricane. We know how strong our health, and how strong our consciousness is when it's under attack. We have obstacles, challenges. And without those, we wouldn't really be able to have a clear indication. We don't really understand or know how much someone is devotional until they're given chances not to be devotional. We don't realize how much somebody is pure that they have a chance not to be pure. Unless one is pure in herself, then purity can perceive purity. But a basic barometer is that once the test is there, then some performance shows. We don't really know how well someone sings. We really don't know how well someone performs until they have chance to perform outside of just to themselves. But when they perform in competition, when they perform with opposition, then we can see, oh, how good a sportsman, how good a wrestler, how good a sadhaka. We know how strong we are sadhakas until we are sometimes in environments where we're not around sadhakas. Or we are not in an environment that at every moment we're being stimulated by transcendental pictures, by the murtis, by the bhajan, by the kirtan, by the prasad, by those who also understand the principles that we follow. And so sometimes we are that kind of sadhaka, where our focus on the sadhya or the goal is just not that strong. And it is Krishna's merciful duty to give us chance to strengthen it by often putting us in situations where we can see or be more sensitive to what we need to work on. Just a similar example with a Brahmin who was also engaged, similar in meditation, and he was watching a prostitute in a prostitute's house. And as he was giving discourse, he was just saying how sinful that this woman is. Interesting how it's many times the men are more sinful than the women, huh? In these stories. So he said he was going to put a rock down every time a customer would come. Every time a new person would go into the house, another person was going to put a rock down. He said, with all these rocks, she was a good businesswoman. So many customers. So when she heard about this, she felt such compunction that her own life, which is sinful, which she accepted, but it was a disturbance to such a saintly person. And just of her hearing the effects of what she was doing, having on the saintly entity, she had such a change of mind and change of heart that she changed her lifestyle. But the Brahmin who was so arrogant about his degree of bhakti, or his degree of jnana, or his degree of austerity, of tapa, that it really wasn't that strong. Because he was spending so much meditation in the deviation. Yes, necessary to recognize what isn't proper so we can know what is proper, but he spent so much energy on the deviation, which was a sign of attachment, a sign of attraction, a sign of arrogance, a sign of being condescending. And so even when we do see sin, the proper sadhaka's duty and mindset is to think how to help, how to serve, and to feel a sense of compassion and reflection and thinking how someone is doing such an injustice to this existence that they have, which is for seeking out self-realization. So whether it's Brother Mangal Thakur, who was so determined to reach the prostitute at any cost, whether it's this Brahmana who's engaged in looking at the prostitute and how many people are going into her house, or the yogi who was meditating and seeing how distracted he was. That in all these cases we see something interesting about the importance of absorption, how it happens when we're really, really determined, and how it's lacking if we're not sufficiently focused and determined. So it's in this spirit that I've written this particular prayer. And for me, of course, these are not just writings. None of my beggar meditations are, especially in this book. I'm on a time clock now in terms of how long I'm in the body. And so we're trying to think how to use each moment each day to the best possible, how to honor inevitable death, how to leave the body gloriously, and how ultimately to embrace whatever happens to the material body in terms of still being able to offer it to its last moment in Guru and Krishna's service. So we have sometimes what's called Hrida Roga or Hridaya Durlabhya, either what's called the disease of the heart or weakness of the heart. And so it's the weakness of the heart that causes us to sometimes minimize the ninefold process. So I'm writing this in terms of looking very close at fear of death. Just some weeks ago, one of my god brothers wrote me and said, "Yeah, it's nice one or two communications that you've sent out, but when we all understand philosophically that we're not these bodies, and we understand philosophically that we're all going to die." He said, but what about Maharaj? What fear are you really having about death? At first I was wondering why he's asking the question. Then I thought, yeah, it's a real question. That, yes, we can philosophically understand something, but what fears do we have? And immediately I thought, I have no fear, but then I thought, I do. And one of the fears I have is that
I, like anyone else, have no interest or do not want to engage in a slow, painful death. And so I thought, it's a good question, because yeah, there is a fear I have. I was thinking, I don't have any fears, whatever Krishna arranges, but I think, yeah, I do have a fear. The fear of the slow, agonizing, debilitating death, where you can't function and you can't physically serve, and where, you know, you feel, you know, it's totally useless. And so I address that in this meditation. Now I address this in the mood of a conversation of the soul versus temporary personality. See, as one is entering to death, one should, and if very advanced, not only should, but must and have already attained a very deep connection with the soul, where one is unfolding one's original nature. Because we are all an existence that's not the eternal, that's actually different in many, many ways than the personalities that we now have. The purer we are, the more there's an integration that spills over with the personality that we are having in these days, in these physical bodies, and in our eternal services to Krishna. So this is a conversation where the soul that is in full knowledge, is such as Ananda Vigraha, in bliss, and is eternal, is directly having a conversation and even somewhat chastising the me, or the personality in the body. So this is called, the title of this is The Ninefold Process of Full Surrender. The Ninefold Process of Full Surrender. I wrote this in Hawaii, in a very deep reflective state of seeing that of all the things we were trying, that the cancer just seemed like it just wasn't going to go away. That it's finding its own way to surface. And we're sort of dealing with that, seemingly that same situation now, that right after the festival, I distinctly noticed some observing of the cancer. And so this kind of cancer is so crazy that sometimes from day to day you can see a retreating, and you can feel and sense an advancement. So I thought this was appropriate now that I'm going to, again, aggression, full of aggressiveness from 8:30 in the morning to 8:30 at night, and doing different things. And I was thinking, again, how much do I want to continue this? Is it worth all of this just to try to keep the body together? But yes, it is necessary, because the body is yours in the first place. And then one must do it to maintain the body as long as possible, to keep on engaging in services in different ways. So you go through different types of reflections. I was going through that at that time in Hawaii, when every day we would see in the morning that the cancer tumors were getting larger and larger. So in that spirit of trying to look deeper at focusing the proper sadhaka, focusing more on the sadhya, or the ultimate goal of Shivanagriti, trying to be free and freer of the hridaya rog, the disease of the heart, then we look close at what are we really about ultimately, is this ninefold process. So now, this conversation. My soul, feeling all my anxieties, felt this was a good time to intervene. My soul said, "Why are you in so much anxiety about whether you live or die? If you live, what will you continue to do? Devotional service, of course. If you die, what will you continue to do? Devotional service, of course. Ma jiva, ma marobha. You can live or you can die. If you live or die, we know that story where this is given. If you live or die, it's okay. But there is so much service waiting for you. Whether you stay in the same physical body or change bodies, your spiritual master has already arranged your assignments. Your anxiety should be how to please Guru and Krishna and how to get freed from being separated from them. So here I'm writing this in the mood of seeing that I'm slowly dying and trying to address, look close at what fears are there. But look even closer at what one's identity is to be about. Is it that giving up this body is something outside of devotional service? Is it something that's outside of just existing in the material universe? No, it is a integral part of one's presence in this realm, whether spiritual or non-spiritual. The soul goes on. You are in great anxiety about your medical care and treatments. You know, we get different medications and machines from all over the world, practically. Whatever is practically there, almost we've tried. I'm also at the point now that I'm looking at one last kind of treatment, and if that doesn't work, then also I'm ready to back away from even the alternative treatments. So you're in great anxiety about your... We've already given up on the allopathic. The doctors have said that they've given up. That means nothing else they can do, which we understood. But then also alternatives. I mean, you try and try, and after a while, you realize it becomes over-endeavor. You are in great anxiety about your medical care and treatments. Sometimes you're disturbed about the side effects of the drugs. Other times you're overwhelmed with the amount of medication you must digest in tablets, liquids, and intravenous IVs. Taking over 50 tablets. Other times you're in anxiety thinking how long must you continue with these protocols. Why not be in more anxiety about Shravanam, hearing the transcendental message of Bhakti Ras? Your anxiety should be how to please Guru and Krishna and how to get freed from our separateness. This says again, the anxiety and tension that the prostitute had, that the harlot had, I'm sorry, the lady who was going to be with her paramour, that Brahma Mangala the core had, great tension and anxiety. If that anxiety, as Brahma Mangala was told by Chintamani, if you could have that kind of attention and dedication and determination for service of Krishna, that you'd be pure, fully absorbed in bhakti ras. So my soul was speaking in this way. So why don't you have this anxiety for Sravana? Why don't you have this kind of intensity? My soul reported, you worry each day. As Krishna says, Masucha, do not worry. You worry each day if the cancer has spread to other organs of the body. You are concerned with if this has spread with organs, which organs and how seriously affected are these organs. Are you forgetting that the whole material body is diseased? Sometimes the disease state of the body is very obvious, sometimes it's not so obvious. Our sickness is just a reminder that a disease is there, and it brings us to a more obvious reflection of what the body does and what it's about. When it is more obvious, it reminds us of its temporary nature to help us to not become overly absorbed in it. When it's not so obvious, then we have a tendency to take so many things for granted. And it's to our disservice, to our own acceleration. The soul is saying, you should be more concerned about kirtanam, chanting the glories of the Lord. As one calls on the Lord's name with sufficient purity, reciprocation is immediate. Your anxiety should be how to please Guru and Krishna and how to get free from being separated from them. So again, so you see the pattern is, you're worried about this or worried about that, but what about Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, etc.? The things to really worry about. Why not allow that intensity, which is healthy and necessary? Why not allow that intensity and that desperation to go into the areas where it will be sufficiently beneficial and auspicious? My soul continued, you are in so much anxiety about your extreme austere diet. And now they have me on salads and vegetable, and then I go on just juices, and then after juices, who knows? Then we go back to cheesecakes and pizza. That'll become an austerity, just trying to digest such. Sometimes you have no or very low appetite. At this time I was writing this, I had no appetite. For a devotee, that's hell. It's one thing to eat austerely, but to have no appetite, well, you don't even desire to eat. Prasadam is so integral to our existence. If you don't believe it, just stop eating prasadam. Stop taking grains and other things. Sometimes you reflect on all the wonderful variegated things you used to eat. You know, again, it shows the intensity. What do you think people who are starving dream about? Food. They don't dream about sex. They don't dream about money. They don't dream about fame. That may be there, but not to the extent. That intense dream would be about food. Where there is greed, where there is focus on something, one becomes possessed, absorbed in that. Sometimes you reflect on all of your wonderful, variegated things you used to eat. It is natural that as your body ages, you should be more alert about what you eat and drink. This should be natural, even if you're not sick. This is why you should be more in anxiety about smaranam, remembering the pastimes of the Lord and His servants. By remembering them, one gets their association. Your anxiety should be how to please Guru and Krishna and how to get free from being separate from them. Satya Sankalpa, this is when we make vows and we keep these vows. And so when we're really focused, then we make vows or we situate ourselves in devotion. It's not the Bhogatyaga, it's not a situation where we're so much in and out or we take them for granted. Your anxiety should be how to please Guru and Krishna and how to get free from being separated from them. My soul now exclaimed, almost in a hilarious spirit, it is obvious you are in such anxiety due to having lost so much weight. I had lost 40 pounds. I've gained maybe a lot of it back, at least 10 pounds. And to not being able to sleep peacefully at night for about 2 months or so, I wasn't able to sleep. Month and a half. These experiences are surely an indication of the limitations and the harassment of the physical body. During the night time, when your foot, which is infiltrated by cancer cells, gives you more trouble, you must use this experience to focus more on pada sevanam. Instead of meditating on your feet or your foot, meditate on serving the lotus feet of the Lord. So don't forget that, my soul is saying, Mother Yasoda. Your anxiety should be how to please Guru and Krishna and how to get free from being separate from them. My soul kept on talking. Knowing that I have a short time to understand all that is necessary, he said, you are very anxious about not being able to travel and to preach. You have traveled around the world several times, giving lectures, seminars, and workshops. You should not worry, Masucha, you should not worry about this so much. More important than what we speak is how we live and what consciousness and how our consciousness is focused, what our consciousness is focused on. Anybody can speak something how we live and how we live when we have the confrontation or the test. You should be more concerned with what? Archanam, with deity worship. Even when one cannot be so physically available to others, in other words, so many times our meditations and disturbance is another form of worshiping our ego, worshiping our physical existence. Worship is necessary, or worshiping heroes or other personalities. Worship is there, it's natural, it's innate, it's inherent. But why not focus that more intensely on deity worship? All of us can apply these things to our own life as we look closer at the fact that being in the body means worry, 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 worry. It means anxiety. It means fears and frustrations. But the thing is, now how do we not deny or even get rid of the fears and the anxieties and the frustrations, but how do we use these fears, anxieties and frustrations, and we offer it at the lotus feet of the Lord, rather than being concerned about what is going on with our own bodies or our own environment. Arjun was not in denial about the tree, denial about the branches and the leaves. He just was not going to allow it to be of a distraction for him. Even when one cannot be so physically available to others, one can use this as a time to take more shelter of deity worship. The deities in the temple or at your home, etc. The deities know our most inward desires and needs. They are most merciful to their sincere servants. Your anxiety should be about how to please Guru and Krishna and how to be free from being separated from them. My soul goes on, a few more discussions. My soul very mercifully tried to help me more by explaining. I know that one of your worst fears is to die a slow, painful death. Already there are times when you want to cry out to Guru and Krishna that you cannot bear this anguish another day. However, you should be more anxious about taking shelter of Vandanam. What is Vandanam? Prayer. Prayers are such an intimate connection with Guru and Krishna. Prayers are like conversations, with chance to have conversation with a spiritual mentor, with the Lord, conversation with acharyas, with sadhus. It's an amazing way to bond together by having so much of the mental culture that opens up for more blessings from transcendence. Through prayers, one can present their case before the Lord and beg him to allow his will to manifest. So prayers are a way to petition Krishna to manifest or to use us more in his service and to manifest more in our lives. If it is his will for a slow, painful transition, then let it be. Let it be so. For our worshipable, able Lord only arranges what is best for the jiva who is fixed deeply in profound internal prayer. So once again, I remind you, the soul is saying, your anxiety should be how to please Guru and Krishna and how to be free from being separated from them. So here he's saying, so one of your greatest fears is to have a slow, painful death. He's saying, well, even if that is the case, then there is reason for that and is necessary, and the Lord doesn't make a mistake, and use that to engage more in Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, etc. In this case, Vandanam. My soul stared at me while saying, you are very afraid of being forgotten about by sadhus. But this is a foolish concern. First, one should never be eager for fame, adoration, and distinction. Second, one should always remind themselves that all services are really an offering to one's guru and Krishna, and they are both fully aware and appreciative of unconditional service. So if we think how whatever each of us or any of us do, it is a chance to offer something very personally to our spiritual masters. And so how little or how big that may be is insignificant, but what's important is how devotional that is and how serious we are in doing that according to Shastra. They are best friends and well-wishers of everyone. It is better that you be more anxious about Dasham and Sakyam. Being a humble servant and desiring friendly, appreciative service and association with the Lord. After all, your anxiety should be how to please Guru and Krishna and how to get free from being separated from them. What is the last one I didn't mention yet? Okay, so we conclude with Atma Nivedanam. My soul slowed down his speech as if to make sure I heard and internalized each of his words. He said, my beloved Bhakti Chirta, who is non-different than myself, once all fear, attachments, and false ego are destroyed, we will be fully united as one soul eternally serving the divine couple. Please give up all your anxieties about whether you live or die, how long you must continue with difficult treatments and their side effects. Sometimes the treatments are more complex or more cumbersome than sometimes some disease, or some aspect of the diseases. You must give up all fears about the cancer spreading. Do not give any more energy to worrying about diet, weight loss, or loss of sleep. For you're ultimately heading for trading in this harassing, limited body for a new spiritual one. Lastly, do not worry. Master Chah, do not worry about dying for excruciating pain and later being forgotten, etc. Your illness is a sign of Guru and Krishna's special and personal mercy being extended on you. Your outcome has already been arranged. Your prayers were heard and accepted even before they left your mind. All you have to do now is to focus more on Atma Nivedanam, full surrender, Shivanagati. You have spoken about, written about, and constantly heard about the power of full surrender. Now the day and time has come. Atma Nivedanam is knocking on your boom boom front door. Just as I have been telling you, your anxiety should be how to please Guru and Krishna and how to get freed from being separated from them. Very soon, and we end with this, very soon, by the mercy of your spiritual master, you're being lovingly forced. You're being lovingly forced to embrace full surrender. Now that may sound strange to a religionist or to a materialist. Forcing somebody to surrender, how is that love? But that is love, when love is so impacting that it grabs you and just pushes you to higher heights, or pushes you to safety or security, or pushes you, in these cases, to eternity. So by joyful and radiant, be joyful and radiant. For soon, only moments away, your life, or better to say, your death will be successful. Yes, my darling, you are the lowly beggar whose prayers have been heard and accepted. Hare Krishna. So what we talked about in this little discussion is we looked at sadhya, the ultimate goal, how to be proper sadhakas and go deeper and deeper in our sadhana. We addressed this Hridai Rog and Hridai Durlabhya, the weakness of the disease of the heart and the weakness of the heart. And it's really the disease of the heart and the weakness of the heart that causes us to minimize the power of the ninefold process of surrender, or cause us to feel that surrendering is not going to be all-inclusive for our sense of well-being. We talked about the Mangaldakor, how his intensity for deviation, if it was that kind of intensity focused on devotion, how it would bring purity. We looked at the intensity of the lady who's running through the bush, trying to catch up with her paramour for sex, and how the yogi saw that she was more intense than him. We looked at the intensity of the superficiality of the Brahmin who was engaged in discourses, but while he was discoursing, he was just thinking of the lady and her sex life, and just putting down rocks, letting them see how many customers that the prostitute was in fact having. We talked about Arjuna and how it was a wonderful example of what it takes, this kind of intensity to be able to reach the goal and to break past the three modes of material nature, or the Mahatattva. And then, of course, we looked at the meditation, where we're looking at the different ninefold process, while looking at different fears that are there, or attention that's being given in different areas or departments of life, and seeing that, yes, why not direct that in one or all of the ninefold tenets that will guarantee devotion if we engage in these in the proper way with the proper depth or the proper profundity. So as we said, how we're looking at trying to deal with the practicalities of the day-to-day experience, trying to use what's happening in my own life or what's happening in my own impending death to continue serving on the battlefield. So my tendency is to rewrite something, writing these books. And so we're writing and reflecting and trying to be as revealing as possible and trying to give some support to help others who may be going through this in the future. All of us will in different ways. But most important, to allow us to realize that our activity or experience in Krishna consciousness is a chance to live Bhagavatam. Krishna knows exactly what each person needs, what each person can entail or can deal with, will never give us more than we can bear, even when it may seem to be that way. I'm saying how sometimes the soul is addressing how sometimes it seems that I'm thinking that it's more than I can deal with. Yes, that reflection is there. But then as we look closer at the philosophy, we look closer at the nature of the spiritual journey, we realize, no, this is not. Therefore, it's necessary and should be understood and embraced and appreciated in a way that it accelerates growth. We want to be spiritual utilitarians. We want to be opportunistic, not for ourselves, for material ingratiation or gratifications, but we want to be utilitarian and opportunistic and trying to capture the moment, trying to use each opportunity as a way to understand a spiritual life better, as a way to experience it. As we do that, our life will take on such a richness, whether, like in Arjuna's case, he didn't see the tree, he didn't see the leaves, he didn't see the branches. So our life will take on a certain potency that, yes, the economic problems will be there, the physical problems will be there, relationship problems will be there, all those things will be there, family problems, etc., marital problems. But it will not cause us to deter and even to procrastinate in connecting with the goal. And where it causes us to procrastinate, then that's a sign of what we need to fix. That is a sign that there's things that are of such importance to us that these secondary things have overshadowed the primary. So we're not just teaching a pious, trying to share a pious guy idea. You just suffer and surrender now, and maybe there'll be a kingdom of God, and maybe you'll be rewarded, and maybe the Lord is aware. No. If our faith is strong, we can accept this because of what we're experiencing. See, faith, let's face it, faith cannot be really strong if the experiences are not rich. Anticipation can be strong for a while. You can be so in great anticipation, somebody's going to give you, you know, $5,000. But if you're not seeing some indicators that's showing that it's about to happen, then even though you had overwhelming anticipation, gradually, although you're still anticipating, your anticipation begins to waver. But if you find, oh, the person is collecting the money, or the person has it, and they're already ready to transfer it into your name, or they're on their way bringing it to you, or they've sent it to somebody else to give to you, then even though you don't have it yet, you're excited because it's just around the corner. Because you know that steps are in motion to see that it happens. And so our faith can't continue to be strong if we're not seeing certain steps happening in our lives that's allowing us to keep on having that faith. And that is part of the role of the Shastra to remind us. That is part of the role of sadhus to guide us and to show us, and especially mentors, to provide the highest level of guidance. And so this helps to keep us more determined that in spite of the leaves and the branches and the tree, to not to put too much attention in that, while we are looking at the eye of the bird, or looking for that very fine goal that's accessible. Any questions or any comments that anyone has? Hari Sai, I think, once shared this. When he was the servant of Srila Prabhupada, and often devotees would ask, you know, what is one of your greatest appreciations in being Prabhupada's servant? You know, imagine someone who's with the Guru every day, and in all kinds of circumstances, situations, environments, giving the darshan, giving the lecture, feeding him, taking him to the toilet, doing all kinds of things, especially up at the last moments of death. And he's asked, well, what is one of the most amazing things that you experience in that service? And I know one time he shared that one of the more amazing things to him about Srila Prabhupada was how he was so steady, how he was so fixed. Whether he was in the most, you know, regal environment, whether he was in the most opulent, you know, mansion or life member's residence or palace, or whether he was in a little hut in Mayapur or in Bombay or previously in Vrindavan, is that Srila Prabhupada's mood was the same. Is that so? Always trying to give Krishna consciousness to others, always absorbed in Krishna in such a way. So here we see this kind of intensity where the primary is never, the secondary never becomes a distraction from the primary. And we see the test of the level of devotion when there's all kind of things that can distract. And he was letting us know how amazing it was that Prabhupada was not getting distracted. Mm-hmm. Advaita.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. For class, as you were going through your meditation, you shared with us today, I was noticing that it seems like that out of all of those nine processes, that there are two that we can always perform, and in others we can be, due to circumstance, always kind of somewhat checked or stopped or distracted. We can always, seems like, offer prayers, or we can always reflect and practice smaranam. So, is it that in others, like, let's say, I don't know, worshipping the deities, we are not always able to worship the deities, we are not always able to chant or to to hear, yeah, due to the circumstance and service. So is it that that the things we are engaged in because of the nature of the service are also part of the Shravanam, Kirtanam, and all others, because we are anticipating in the heart to take care of the business or to take care of whatever?
Well, Rupa Goswami, I think Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti also addresses this, is that everything that is done, that it must be accompanied with the chanting of the holy name. Meaning that the chanting of Krishna's name is a constant reminder to us that whatever we're doing, whatever we're about to do, it should be in the mood of preparing ourselves for meeting the Lord. It should be an offering to the Lord. It should be a prayer asking the Lord to engage us, asking the Lord to forgive us for our sinful nature, sinful thoughts, etc. To be restored in that sense. So yes, there are times, which is practically all the time in Kali Yuga, we can't do all of these things expertly. And at times we can't even do some of them, as you're saying. But still, there are always some or one that we can do. And we are informed that any one of these that we do with sufficient purity can take us back to Godhead. Then one may ask, well, then why do we do all nine? Because we don't do any of them that profound. And because we've been asked to, then as we do such, then we make our efforts And like in the case of the sparrow, who was determined to drink up the ocean, and Garuda came. So we had to do all of them. So we shouldn't think, well, then let us just focus on one of these and not worry about the others. No, no. We have a duty to try to do all of them if we have the capacity. Once we are mentally or physically unable, then that is our particular field of activity, and that is a service, that is the field that we have to engage in that Krishna has arranged. Because we know we have people who are blind. We have devotees who are impaired, speech impaired, hearing impaired, etc. So then, is it impossible for them to go back to Godhead? Yes, they can go back to Godhead, maybe even faster. Perhaps their impairment or their handicap has helped them even more to come off the bodily platform. Perhaps it helped them to, with senses are active, to focus more, you know, with those senses. And then all of these, we see the importance of what is going on in the mind. Because we can do them, but we can do them in a superficial way. That's why we talked about to the disciples about the antarmukhya shikshas and the bahya mukhya shikshas. The guru giris, those who are flag waving, guru. So they can do everything externally, but what about what's going on internally? So the external should be there because it helps to focus the internal, but most important is the internal. It's like you don't say, well, Oh yes, say you're president, and so someone says, I'm no problem. I'm serving in the mine. I'll clean the floor in the mine. I'll wash the dishes in the mine. Tell them, oh, that's good. You go and physically do it while you do it in the mine also. You tell them you're eating in the mine also, right? So thank you. Then why don't you do that advance? Then you honor prasadam in the mine also. Any other question? Yes. Sir.
Hari Bol Maharaj. I'm wondering whether I actually wrote this down properly. You said that faith cannot be strong if the experience is not strong. Is that what
you said? Yes. In other words, faith is not strong, cannot be strong. We need to talk about that. Faith has to do with past, present, and most important, anticipation in the future. So faith is weak. If the past was shaky or incoherent, it's going to interfere with some aspect of the faith. If the present is not satisfying, or is incoherent, or disturbing, or disappointing, or harassing, it's going to interfere with the faith. Faith is so much acceptance and participation and preparation of what is not fully in one's grasp at that time. But the faith cannot be strong if other things that were or can or can be in the grasp are not favorable. If things are not put in place, if experience is not there, if situations are not in alignment, then the faith will naturally be weak. This is simple. You have faith that somebody will give you $5,000. I give an example. And so, if you don't see any steps for that, the faith gets weaker and weaker. If you don't see them going through any endeavors to guarantee or show that they're really going to bring it to you, then your faith gets weak. It's just that emphatic. So we have faith, and if we don't see if we don't see purity, our faith will get weak. If you're studying law and you don't see people graduating, or you don't see enough people graduating, you're going to feel that maybe this is too hard, or maybe you may fail also. If you're having faith about graduating and you are not passing some of the tests and getting, you know, passing grade, your faith is going to get weak about getting a certificate. So what happens to you makes your faith stronger. What happens around you, what's happening to others, makes your faith weaker or makes your faith stronger. Now, what if we're so dull that Krishna is sending faith to us, but we are not honoring it? Or what if we're so dull or so lazy that we're getting the test opportunity from day to day or from different semesters, but we don't study to pass it? Then, of course, we will more than likely fail, and our faith may be weak or we'll have artificial faith or misplaced faith that we're going to get a degree. Sometimes one has faith that I'm going to graduate, even though they got several tests, they fail, even though they haven't come up to the standard, and they have some faith that's just in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion. And then the final exam comes, or the final arrangements, and they fail. So faith is strong. Now take the opposite. Somebody has come to the class every day, and we use an example of being in law school. They have passed several tests. They have gotten scored very high. And so they have one of the tests to take. Their faith is strong. Their faith is, I'm going to also do high on this. And more than likely they will. Because they have a track record of success, of achievements, of accomplishments. And they have a track record of studying and being able to compete according to what is being given. And they have so much credits that's there a part of them that even if they don't do so well, they have faith and know that they're still going to pass. Why should it be any different than devotional service? If we have such a track record of simple things that we've done, deviations that we've done, so much a track record of offensive mentality, of weakness of heart, if we have so much a track record of people around us who are weak, people around us who have fallen down, so much a track record of questioning or wondering if or doubting if anybody's pure, because perhaps not so many people are. If we have so much of that, then our faith is going to be weak. This is natural. Now, what if we have an environment that's full of problems, incoherences, and disturbances, and failure? One can still have strong faith, but it'll be more difficult. But we have an environment where most people have not graduated from the law school. It doesn't mean that we cannot graduate, but it means that, yes, we're going to have more questioning about our own ability to graduate. Doesn't mean that we won't be able to, but it does definitely mean that there will be potentially and more probably more doubt that's there. So the individual's own performance and record is an integral part, past, present, that helps to ignite anticipation about the future, but also the environment, immediate environment, and the legacy that that person is associated with. This is the importance of Sangha, of how we all impact on each other. Keep in mind how so often one becomes a high achiever because one studies high achievement. One has role models. One follows, studies, and then imbibes such. So it takes more than just the individual's own idea and effort. It takes also effort that's being focused on high achievement, on success, and becoming successful, along with one's own integral periods or little successes. That's why some time back I gave that rather extensive discussion on the importance of short-term goals, which is a little controversial because we're normally told just to keep focused on the ultimate goal. And that's ideally wonderful, but it's somewhat unfunctional. Because you can't keep focusing with great enthusiasm, unless you're pure, on a higher goal if you're not having certain short-term success. And you can't have short-term success without also a certain amount of strategizing and planning. And then from those achievements, they gradually aggregate into a bigger and bigger success that brings one to, you know, the final success. So to just go on from day to day in our devotional life without any plans, without using our spiritual intelligence, is dangerous. Because you're anticipating long-term success, but it happens based on achievements, short-term achievements. And those short-term achievements are not just being a blind follower. We don't want to be blind doubters, but we want to be blind followers. Sometimes we give up blind following, but then we become, blind doubters. But we want to be insightful by being selective and being focused, like in these stories. Other questions? And then pass it to Kiran.
Maharaj, what is all needed for a person to intensify the spiritual focus? What all is needed, is necessary?
What's needed to intensify the spiritual focus? What's needed to intensify us when we have something that's important to us that we want? What intensifies it is that we're thinking how we could benefit from it, how we could use it. We're thinking about what would happen if we don't have it, and so we go for it. You think about what would happen if you didn't have your computer, if you didn't have your cell phone, if you didn't have this or that for certain people. You think about, well, yes, it would be like this, like that, and you think, I must have it, I must get it fixed. And so we must think, what beauty is there as we go deeper and deeper into the amazing guna, rupa, lila, etc. Of Krishna. We look at all of these wonderful things that's associated with the spiritual paradigm. We want to be a part of it. And then we must also think what it is if we miss out. And as we have more anxiety about what happens if we miss out, we make sure that we don't miss out. It's having more and more fixation on poverty or the positive, and more desire to avoid the nivritti or the negative. More and more fear of Maya, while especially having more determination for the beauty of you know what is attainable. Okay, so one or two more, and then we need to stop and let you take the sound. I need to go back to my medications.
I was just like my question was somewhat similar to his, but I was thinking like. So we come to a point of understanding like whatever sadhana we are doing, the point is to come to understanding Krishna. And similarly, if we understand Krishna, everything is understood.
Mm-hmm.
So when one comes to that point, one understands, but he feels like to do more, but he doesn't know which is the best way to go forward and what are the checks we should have so that, you know, we are going forward rather than going backward.
Well, that's where you take advantage of mature sadhus. That's where you connect with your guru. That's where you go deeper in exploration in the shastra. Because basically all examples are there, what is necessary in the shastra. But we have the importance of sadhu sangha so that the shastra stays alive. If we're only embracing the shastra with a healthy sadhu sangha, then shastra becomes dead. Because it becomes just historical. Or becomes conceptual. So, again, as an example, if we have examples of all the people who got $5,000 in the past, we don't see anybody getting it now, then it's something of the past. It's history. We have to see people who are now getting it so we can also see how this time and place, how to get our $5,000. See, some things we make them more complicated than they really are, because this is just the nature of how we run from Krishna lifetime after lifetime. So last question. Mm-hmm. Swaka.
Thank you for the class, Maharaj. I'd like to.
For me, it's not a class. It's a reflection on leaving the body, and you know. But I understand what you're saying.
I'd like to reflect on some of the points that you made, Arjuna. The ideal student,
yes,
focusing on the eye of the bird only, and you're making many points for us to also develop such focus. Then we see Arjuna, the same Arjuna who Krishna chose to speak Bhagavad Gita. And in that position, even though he had that superior focus, he still was put in the position of being the foolish one,
mm-hmm.
who forgot everything.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, Krishna did choose Arjuna on the basis of the relationship. So the relationship was, he was his dearmost friend. So how can we have the faith to know that we actually have that relationship? Mm. Or is that something they were cultivating?
Mm. Nice question. It's interesting how the same Arjuna who was so fixed, same time in the Bhagavad Gita, he says at some point, you know, Arjuna is so bewildered. But we understand that he's being covered over, you know, by Krishna's arrangement. As Krishna says, Natvaivaham Nito Samnathamne Me Janani Pa. Never was a time that you did not exist, so these kings. So Arjuna is eternally connected with Krishna, but he's being covered over so that this Leela can take place. And how do we know that we have? And see, that's where the faith comes, because how do we know that Savrasacham Sannivisto, how do we know that Krishna is in our hearts? Well, because Krishna says so. So when Krishna says how he can be known, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, he's saying it. And he's saying, those who worship me sufficiently with devotion and love, he says, I give them the knowledge of how to come unto me. So the Lord is letting us know through Bhagavad Gita and so many of his of the scriptures in the pastimes, especially as he comes as Mahaprabhu, etc. But we'll see in all of the different incarnations, he's helping us to become a little more sensitive to the fact that we're special, and that he's coming to annihilate the demons, eradicate the incoherence, and to protect, you know, the Savage's devotees, or to reclaim his devotees. So we know by what he says, but more important, by his actions. And this is how we also to know the sadhus, by what they say and by their actions. Krishna sends his special agents showing his love, and then we see how much he cares by how he sends his special agents. Then we see even more how much he cares that at times and from time to time he comes himself. We see how much he cares by what he shares constantly through the scripture. And so from that we feel, we then have more and more reasons to have faith by what he's done in the past, by what he's doing now, and by what he can do in the future. But still, faith must be there. Because something may happen many times over, and sometimes it may happen, sometimes it may not happen, and then we may wonder, well, would it happen for us, or would it happen again? And this is why Shraddha is so important. Shraddha Valabhate Gyanam Tatpavatsam Nityendriyam. A Christian says a faithful man or faithful person who engages in devotional service and does certain things, attains a supreme spiritual truth, controls the mind, regulates the senses, etc. So it is ultimately the entire process of bhakti. We're honoring and we're following it because Krishna himself has said that we should. And because of that, he said, this is how you can attain me, and we're ready, you know, we're ready to try it. Now you take the other extreme. What if it is a hype? Well, even if we take that extreme, the risk is still worth what is possible. Is it a rational leap of faith? Yes, and we see that he's saying it again and again in different ways. He comes in incarnations and different avatars and gives us the same thing. And then when we have our immediate acharyas who are saying something similar, our founder acharya and our grand-grand-grandfather acharyas, etc., and they're saying similar. And we say, well, they can work with so many, and so many highly evolved souls have accepted such, then I want to put my faith there. And the last thing, we look at the alternative, is if all of this, if we don't do these things, and we pursue a life of sense gratification, what can we expect for the present, and what can we expect for the future? And we think, you know, I have no desire to just to be an ordinary sense gratifier, I have no desire to be controlled or a slave of my senses, I have no desire to live a life without any higher values or any higher aspirations other than my own maintenance. I have no desire to live a life of just the chewing of the chewed. We realize how fortunate that we are that we have a chance to engage in this kind of struggle and austerity when Krishna has said of what he will do, you know, based on that. He said, as we surrender, that he will reward accordingly. And we say, okay, I want to be a part of that. I want the biggest reward, and therefore I want the big surrender so that that can happen. So this was the basic, this was the essence of the discussion. Shivanagati, Sadhya, the goal, Shivanagati, full surrender, as we embrace deeper and deeper the ninefold process. That our anxieties are there, and in many cases, they're genuine anxieties. But why not allow that kind of anxiety to be focused in our devotional activities? The fact that we can have these intense anxieties shows how much we have ability to be very intense. The fact that Devamangala Thakur could be so intense in trying to meet Chintamani shows how much one can be very determined. The fact that this lady running for her paramour can be so determined and so focused she didn't even see the sadhu shows, you know, what's there. So we are reminding ourselves that it's not having to create determination. And, you know, go home with this thought. It's not that we have to create determination. And so there's a big, you know, endeavor of manipulation and maturation to create this determination. It's that determination is with all of us, and we just have to refocus it. That's why Prabhupada said that I come to remind you, come to teach you what you have forgotten. It's jiva jago. Though our spiritual acceleration is reminding ourselves, and others are helping to remind us, and we helping to remind others, so that we become the beautiful entities that we are. And this was the conversation that my soul in this reading was having. It's just trying to remind me or to stimulate me about what is there. Now focus it on the ninefold process. And with that kind of focusing, then one can be able to focus and serve Guru and Krishna. And that should be the anxiety. So that should be our major anxiety. And if we can, we put all this anxiety and be happy that it's there and then rush and offer it at the lotus feet of Radha Damodar. His confounded God is the divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Sivubhad ki, Jai, Hari Bhakti.
stop people.